Justine Picardy, The Fat Lady Sings. It was in the south of France, 3 weeks before her 41st birthday, that Annie realised she had become invisible to men. She had taken her boys to the Riviera for the first few days of June. Her husband was working, harder than ever, and the holiday was a half-term treat for them. After her 12-year-old son had finished his exams, and the 9-year-old recovered from the indignity of his newly fitted orthodontic brace. They were booked into one of those white wedding cake palace hotels on the promenade, kind of tacky, too expensive, but easy, overlooking the beach and with shops and restaurants nearby. So it should have been fun, but there was something depressing about their first night as she stood on the scales in the hotel bathroom. They didn't have scales at home, hadn't for a year or so, but she seemed to have gained a stone since the last time she weighed herself, a couple of months ago in the doctor's surgery. This can't be right, she told herself, hurriedly checking her figures, converting kilos into pounds, and heart-sinking like a stone. But the mirrors told her otherwise, reflecting back the heavy truth. Annie resolved not to weigh herself again. They were on holiday, after all, and she needed a break from worrying. But there were mirrors everywhere in the hotel, full-length mirrors, unlike at home, in the bathroom and behind the wardrobe doors, in the lift and lining the lobby, and though she tried not to look, she barely recognised her reflection, as if she were seeing herself in distorting fairground mirrors, the ones that used to make the boys laugh when they were little at the steam fair that came to the local park every August. But now Annie wasn't laughing. She felt like crying, especially when it started raining on their second day here, heavy rain from the low grey sky. For years she'd thought of herself as thin. 5 years ago, in fact, she'd been very thin, too thin, actually, when she suspected her husband of having an affair. But now, my God, without realising, she'd got thick around the middle, pot-bellied. And at night, in the darkness of the hotel bedroom, while the boys slept peacefully, she grasped heavy handfuls of flesh, unable to believe it was hers. Middle age spread. That was what her mother had always complained about, warned of, even. But Annie hadn't listened, believing herself immune, as daughters often do. And now it had come to her, and she hated that she cared, but she did, casting covert sideways glances at herself in the mirrors as they passed, shocked each time by the hefty woman who looked, startled, back at her. Both of them surprised to be caught staring at one another, the thin woman inside Annie's head, the fat lady in the mirror, neither willing to acknowledge the other. It was like being a teenage girl again, that same disconsolate obsession after years of being, well, if not perfectly content with her body, then at least not thinking about it very much. But as she regressed into adolescent angst, the difference this time round was that men weren't sizing her up. Annie found herself turned into a matron, as if overnight, though not the sort of imposing grand dame before whom men snapped to attention. No, just a middle-aged woman who apparently merged into the walls. On the third evening, she had taken the boys to a restaurant on the seafront where they'd all eaten pizza and ice cream. No point starting a diet on a holiday in the south of France. And the waiters hadn't even bothered with fake Latin charm, couldn't even remember to bring the bill. All too busy falling over themselves to serve the single Barbie blonde drinking red wine alone at another table. I bet she's had Botox, thought Annie, giving the girl the once over. Maybe even plastic surgery. And suddenly, she could understand why her friends at home were taking themselves to the gym, not to mention discreet dermatologists. It was too much to suddenly disappear. And how curious to vanish in the eyes of men, just as one was growing in size. They think you're a single mother, said Marcus, her elder son, observing her being ignored by the waiters. Or a widow, said Jack, her younger one. But Annie guessed the waiters thought no such thing of her. Indeed, did not think of her at all. Later, back at the hotel, she rang her husband for reassurance, but he sounded too tired and stressed about work to care about her petty insecurities. I love you, she said, but Bill seemed not to hear, and afterwards, when he put the phone down, Annie wondered if she was mute now as well as invisible. The following morning, the Riviera sky was still grey as the tarmac streets, and it was raining into the Mediterranean. Over breakfast, croissant, pain au chocolat, brioche with strawberry jam, all of which Annie ate gloomily, steadily. The boys told her her dreams, which was not at all what they usually did in the mornings. Like their father, they were more often monosyllabic when they awoke. I dreamt that there was a nuclear war and you died, said Jack to Annie. What about Dad? Said Marcus. He wasn't there, said Jack. I dreamt Mum died as well, said Marcus. Or maybe she just disappeared. Well, I wouldn't worry, said Annie, buttering herself another hunk of French bread. I'm the picture of health. They wandered around the shops afterwards in the miserable drizzle, but she didn't even attempt to persuade the boys to let her go clothes shopping for herself. Instead, she spent over £100 on surface T-shirts and shorts for them, her lovely growing sons, before scuttling into a pharmacy to buy some vitamin C, as if it might cure all her ills. Mum, your bum is showing, hissed Marcus, appalled, as she bent over to reach the vitamins on the lower shelf. How fortunate, she thought, pulling her jumper down over the offending bottom, not to have had daughters, even though she once longed for a third child, a girl. Just as she was finding herself in this apparent dead end, this pre-menopausal vanishing act, a daughter would be flowering, ripening into desirability. Not that Annie wanted to turn back the clock. The last time she'd been in the south of France was as a student 20 years ago, with another girl, her best friend, during the long university summer holiday. And that had been unsettling in a different, more dangerous way. They'd had very little money, the two of them, just enough to buy bread and a cucumber every day, after paying for a flea-pit hotel, which meant that they were both thinner than when they had arrived. But the constant wolf whistles, more like catcalls really, more jeering than admiring, were disturbing rather than flattering. One morning they had taken a bus to another town, up in the hills, and at the final stop, where they found themselves to be the last passengers on board, the driver had refused to open the door, mouthing obscenities at them, clutching at his groin until Annie had started screaming at him. Afterwards, walking away from the bus stop, taking a shortcut through a small wooded park to avoid the noonday sun, another man appeared from the trees like in a bad B-movie, gesticulating at them and fumbling with his trousers. Annie had made the mistake of laughing, which seemed to make him angry, and he had grabbed hold of her friend, blonder than she was, and they had both started hitting him and scratching him with their nails, until at last he gave up and ran away. So much for Latin lovers, then. It was better being invisible, she decided, as the sun came out after lunch and she walked with the boys along the Croisette. They stopped at a kiosk to buy ice cream cornets, and two sweating, fat, middle-aged Frenchmen pushed her aside, barging their way to the front of the queue. But still, it wasn't the end of the world. And then she realised something else, that other women could still see her. Even the glamorous mademoiselle with waist-length hair who nudged her slightly by accident. Pardon, madame, said the girl politely, and Annie smiled to show she didn't mind. A little further along the promenade, towards the children's playground, an older woman nodded her head at Annie, very slightly, as if in acknowledgement of something, and Annie smiled again, grateful to discover that she was not quite invisible after all. The boys were too grown up for the playground, they said, and the little fairground was closed until the weekend, so they scrambled over the rocks together towards the marina, where the Richmond's boats were berthed, sleek and huge and gleaming. Why was it that boats could be big and still beautiful, wondered Annie, though she wasn't sure if she really liked the yachts, more like white plastic Tupperware containers, all nestled up together in a row. And she wondered, too, if that was how her husband thought of her these days, like Tupperware, everyday and reliable, rather than something more desirable. Fragile, that's what he said when he first touched her all those years ago. You're so fragile. She'd been slender then, and he made her feel fragile. Not at first, when she was sure he loved her, but soon afterwards, and she started feeling more anxious, insecure, as if he might break her. It got worse when she was pregnant with Marcus. As she grew bigger every day, she felt smaller inside, shrinking under her husband's distaste. Afterwards, run ragged with a new baby, and Bill away more often than ever on business trips, Annie had got skinny again, and stayed that way, despite a second pregnancy. Not that being thin had kept him loving her, and slowly she'd begun to care less. Careless? Was that what she had now become? Letting herself go? That's what women said about each other, didn't they? Annie sat on the rock, turning her face up to the sun, feeling the warmth spread through her body. It's not over till the fat lady sings, she said to herself, quiet enough for the boys not to hear as they threw stones into the murky harbour water. Annie wasn't entirely sure what that meant, nor what it might mean to her, but still she started humming a French nursery song she'd learnt at school, just the tune because she couldn't really remember the words. And then, because the humming sounded rather quiet, like a small bee, she thought, Annie started singing the bits of words that she knew. La-la-lying the rest. Sur le pont d'Avignon, on y danse, la-la-la, she sang, getting louder as she went along, remembering herself as a little girl, remembering how she'd imagined other girls, bigger girls, dancing on the bridge, dancing over the water, letting themselves go so fast that no one could stop them. Mum, said Marcus, looking embarrassed, but she didn't stop singing, because he and Jack were smiling too, and so was a man fishing nearby from a little jetty. The man waved at her and she waved back, because she'd finished her song by now, and then she stood and stretched her arms, as if reaching up to touch the clear blue sky. But she wasn't quite big enough for that. Not yet, anyway.